Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. It's time for TWIG, This Week in Google, Episode 9, for September 26th, 2009. Gina, as in subpoena. This Week in Google is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for the Gold account and get your free book at audiblepodcasts.com/twig. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter, user ID audible_com. And by listeners like you. Thanks so much for your contribution. We couldn't do TWiT without it. It's time for TWiG, the show that covers all things Googleist, Googleicious, Googleicious. On the line with us, Jeff Jarvis, the great man at BuzzMachine.com. Hey, Jeff, how are you today?
Hey there, Leo.
Good to see you. Also here, the great Gina Trapani from SmarterWare.org. Hi, Gina.
Hi, howdy. How's it going?
Howdy. I guess you're Californian. You could say howdy.
Yeah, I'm trying out my cowgirl greeting today.
That was the funny thing. When we first moved to California, I was an Easterner like Jeff. I grew up in Rhode Island, and I was in 10th grade. We moved to California in 1971. People said, howdy. And I thought, well, that's strange. What is? I feel like I'm in a John Wayne movie, but they meant it. Well,
it's
howdy,
my way
everybody.
Of never having to say somebody's name.
That's true.
Because you have that, hi, ...
Yeah.
Was that Leo, Larry?
No. Yeah, you're right. And as I get older, I appreciate those tricks more and more. So today we're talking about Google. We're hoping that, Siva will join us. I practiced his last name over and over.
And
I still don't have
just
it.
Just play the MP3 every time you have to say it.
Siva Vaidyanathan will join us in a little bit. He's an expert on the Googleization of everything. In fact, that's the name of his website, but also on the Google book deal. And there is news with the Google book deal, which we'll hold off on until such time as we get Siva on the line. Meanwhile, there are plenty of other things to talk about. Let's talk about SideWiki, because you and Gina Trapani and Jeff Jarvis both had pretty strong opinions about this. I tried it out immediately and observed, first of all, that it ain't a wiki. In fact, it feels very kind of 2002. The idea is you go to a website. First, you have to install the Google toolbar for it to work. Which I hesitated to do, but I thought, well, I'll try it. Then you go to a website and you get a little icon and you can click it. A sidebar opens and now you can put a comment. You can either select some text and comment on that text or comment on the page as a whole. And when you visit a page that has a SideWiki comment, you see that little icon, you can open it up. What was your initial reaction to this, Gina, when you first saw it?
You know, I thought it was odd. But I thought it was fine. I mean, I it isn't a wiki. I thought that was a strange choice of name. But, you know, I thought about every single attempt that Google's made to host content like Google Null and even the wiki-like features in search results. And they were never very successful, right? I mean, Blogger, I think, is the only thing that they own that's been successful at user-generated content. And that's because it, you know,
it was before they
acquired it, right? So I was just kind of like, meh, about it. I don't have the Google toolbar installed. I hear the word toolbar and I want to run the other way, even though it's a mm-hmm. Google product and it's probably pretty good. I mean, I just thought to myself, I don't really care about this. Probably the people who are reading my website aren't going to care about it or have the toolbar installed either. So I didn't think it was that big a deal. But Jeff has a lot to say about this. So.
Well, that's the funny thing. You can't do it in Chrome. I presume you're a Chrome user most of the time.
I use Chrome and I use Firefox. You can't do it in Chrome, although it's going to be built into Chrome eventually, they said.
Strange.
It will be built into Chrome, though. So that's interesting. There are, and this is actually one of my tips for the week, there is a bookmarklet that you can use to view comments on a page. You can't enter comments, but you can view them. So if I'm just curious about what people are saying about my site, I can do that. I mean, I guess I feel like conversations happen about my website in so many different places on Twitter and Facebook and friend feed that it didn't bug me too much. I mean, the fact that it comes in on the side and shows on your site is a little aggressive and strange. I mean, I'll let Jeff explain what he thinks that they should do, which I actually agree with wholeheartedly.
So what did you think, Jeff? You wrote a whole post on it.
danger, danger, Will Robinson. I saw, you know, Google's intent, I think, was not bad. It was to find a way for people to annotate sites and to go on a given site and say, this is a scam or this is a good company or whatever. And that sounds good, but they didn't think it through, I believe. And they didn't ask themselves whether it was evil and holding to their mission. Few problems. First, it for those of us who do have comments, it bifurcates the comments and thus the community. It separates people when you should do the opposite. So I have comments on my blog, and people can now have comments along the side on this Google thing. Second, it allows people to come in and leave spam. Now, granted, Google will probably have algorithms to deal with that, but also trolls and hate speech and grudges and unfair competition and all kinds of things people can now associate with sites. And no algorithm is going to be able to figure all that out. But we, the site owner, has no control over it. So those of us who say that we, you know, care about our conversations and communities, we can't do anything. Now, people gave me some crap properly because I said, oh, Jarvis says newspapers should give up control, and here he wants control. Well, it's not about control then. It's about responsibility. And I can't exercise responsibility over those comments that are the side of my blog. Third, if they're not putting ads on there, but if they ever did, they'll be in deep doo-doo. There was a case of something called Gator about 8 years ago that put up ads on top of people's websites, and the publishers sued and won. And so this idea of being able to hijack the knowledge of what's on my site and add something to it is a problem. So those were all the problems I presented one day. The next day I came back and suggested that the problem in the end was Google thought too small. It wanted to create another conversation space. Well, we got plenty of conversation spaces. Hell, the internet is the conversation space. And if Google thought like Google, if dare I say this, if they'd asked what would Google do, they would, I think, have said, can we find a way to better organize that conversation space? And as they want to organize the world's knowledge. And I think that would be by not creating a means to put content on Google in a centralized world. They should be, what they were doing was hurting the edge and centralizing. They were going away from the cloud and back down to the ground. And that's not very Googly. If instead they turned out strictly an API that said, here's a means of gathering comments not only on your blog, but elsewhere about you, and put them together with some sense. In that process, I'd suggest they probably should buy Technorati and put them out of their misery and organize the conversation on the web, and that would be useful. But what they've done instead is they've tried to centralize the conversation on the web, and that's dangerous.
Well, almost in a way decentralize it because it's attached to each page. I'm thinking if they had something like Technorati or FriendFeed where the discussion was... You could go. This is going to be a problem anyway because I look at my comments. They're spread out everywhere. They're on Twitter. They're on FriendFeed. They're spread out anyway. I use and a lot of people are using Discuss, or I use JSKit's Echo to kind of reaggregate those back into the website. Because Google did put an API on SideWiki, there's no reason those tools couldn't be enhanced to include SideWiki stuff as well.
But all you get is SideWiki then you don't get all that other stuff that you want. You know, somebody said in reaction to what I was saying, well, Jarvis, conversation is already fractured.
Right.
And I said, well, I think it's a bad choice of words because that implies that it's broken. No, the conversation is distributed. That's the way it's meant to be. And Google should be looking on top of that in a meta way and figuring out how to add value to that. Instead, very old media, they try to extract pieces of it.
So it sounds like, it sounds like the fear is that Google is hosting these comments, and because they're so ubiquitous and they have such control over rank and you know, your comments show up on your Google profile, for example, so comments you make in SideWiki show up on your Google profile, like that this is the part that scares me a little bit. It's like, why is Google hosting content? You know, when other startups come up like Facebook and Twitter where people are talking about my site, I don't have as much of a problem with it. But it's like when Google pushes this commenting system into their toolbar, which apparently has millions of users, this is the part that gets a little scary. It feels like now they're trying to host conversations or take host conversations away from my site when typically their strategy has always been to give you access to other web pages.
Well, you raise a really good point, Jeff, as well. I mean, what if people put crap in there? How do I control that? I can't really, right? I mean,
yeah, and no one's going to know the troll who's after you. You know, you could have someone who's stalking you.
I have plenty of people who look for wherever I am and put you know, say Leo's a jerk or the equivalent, all that happens all the time, and I have no control over that.
So if you're, I'm sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, there are some things, right? So if you claim ownership of your site through Google Webmaster Tools, if you make a comment on your site, you will be recognized as the site owner. So that's one thing. And you can report or vote down comments. You can report abuse.
I do like the karma stuff. I think that that's kind of cool. So, in fact, it's weird because people, you get a page of comments and then it says, if you want to see the less interesting comments, press this arrow and you get voted down comments.
Right.
It feels like a parasite, to be honest with you. It feels like, you know, a limpet stuck on the side of my website. So if I register with Google for these webmaster tools, I can then delete comments I don't like, Gina?
No, you can't delete comments. You are merely like, I think somehow they notate that you are the owner of the site in the comments. I believe that it's highlighted. I think Danny Sullivan wrote this up. I haven't actually tried it yet. I feel bad actually commenting on this. I don't even really care about SideWiki very much because I'm probably not
going to
use it.
I don't want it, but at the same time, I'm stuck with it, right? So...
Well, right. And I believe that most, I think you claim your site in order to set up Google Analytics. This is something that most website owners probably have already done anyway. So no, you can't delete comments, but I think you can vote them down and I think you can report abuse or what you think is a troll. But like Jeff says, only you really have the history and know the trolls, the people that are harassing you and just, you know, giving you a hard time for no good reason.
What's funny is right now it seems to be down because I tried it out. I put a comment on my blog. Actually, it was kind of fun. It was a meta comment on my blog about the history of my blog. You know, here's what you're going to get. So it was kind of a fun little meta comment. But now it's not even showing up.
You're right. I'm not getting it either.
I think SideWiki's down. So thank you, Google.
Better that than Gmail. Maybe they reconsidered already. Yeah. Oh, there it is. No, it's working now.
Is it?
I think one of the best comments, the two best comments I saw, one was from a blog called Stuntbox that said that this showed a failure of empathy. They just didn't sit down and put themselves in the shoes of others and say, how is this going to affect them? And I think Google forgets how big they are. My response to that gracious metaphor was a less gracious one. I said that Google probably thinks of itself as Snuffleupagus. Oh, I'm just big, and they don't realize when they want to kill a fly, they can put their fist through the wall, and they've got to realize that now. And it's a problem of size too, just in how the company operates. The other comment, though, I like that gave me comfort was yours, Gina. Your tweet on it said
that I thought SideWiki would go the way of Google Null, which means that you'll never hear about it again.
I think that's probably true. We're the ones who are talking about it. You know, and that's in Google's defense. They have the labs and they have a lot of things in the labs. And I think that's the whole idea is that, we can try all sorts of things and we're not invested in any of them. But this does change the ecology of and you're right. It's not, they're not Snuffleupagus. They carry a lot of weight.
Well, you know, what's interesting. I defend the Google beta culture, to throw it up against the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly right. But I think they've got to find the way to do caveats. And the way to put something like this out, I think, is to ask us, is this a good idea? What are the dangers here? What are the benefits here? And to enable that conversation. And that's kind of not what happened. They just said, oh, look, it's wonderful. You're welcome. And a lot of us looked like gift horse in the mouth.
I think we broke it. It's not working. I can't get it to load.
Jeff, if Google had launched this as an API only with a WordPress plugin demonstration that you could have tried on your site, on your site first, would you have felt differently if they hadn't gotten the toolbar involved?
Yes, I think so. I think that association with when somebody, a new user comes in, uses Chrome, has no idea that this is some separate thing. They think it's part of the site I'm looking at. That's a danger. One. Two. The fact that Google is trying to host these things. It's the same problem we discussed last show, Gina, when you asked about why people are concerned about Google book search. And my answer, right or wrong, I wish we had Siva here to talk with, but was that part of the problem here is Google wasn't just pointing to the content, they were hosting the content. They were drawing the content away from elsewhere in this case. And I think that's a danger too. So yes, a pure API that went beyond just what's in these comments, but also drew in other comments from elsewhere, I think would be valuable. And something's, by the way, going on at Technorati. Bob Wyman from Google sent me an email this morning, and I just looked at their blog. Their API is going to go down for 6 to 8 weeks in October.
Whoa.
On purpose.
What? On purpose? What's the point?
they're doing the next new version. Now, why you have to take it down for 8 weeks, who knows? And I think some folks are guessing maybe there's yet another strategy coming for Technorati. I have no idea.
So
interesting.
Somebody in our friend feed conversation pointed out, I guess, Le Lapin, that it's like something called Digo. There are many, many services that do something similar, allow you to annotate a page. Yeah. But it's not, because it's not Google, it doesn't have the same import.
Yeah, it's like, because Google has so much control over what happens with your site, right? You know, because they are the point of entry for such a large percentage of your site's visitors, it's like the idea of them hosting content, meta content about the site that anybody can add to is a little freaky. You know, a small startup, you know, a separate third party is not as scary as Google hosting this kind of content. And, you know, and are these comments ever going to affect search result ranking at some point? And that kind of thing.
You bet they will. Yeah, because any data that Google can get about a site, especially, again, not a blog with comments. If it's trying to understand, is this site a spam site or a good site for working at home money? You know, there's a scam going on right now that makes it look as if you're going to work for Google when you work from home.
Right.
All you have to do is type a lot. and so that's out there. So if people of goodwill came along and warned their neighbors that this is a scam, then I think that's the good side of what Google's doing. But, and then they would use that in their search results, and that's the good side. But there's a huge bad side here, and people can affect each other.
Well, here's a good thing that Google did this week. They announced that Internet Explorer would have a new Google frame that you could actually put Chrome inside IE. Let me ask the developer, what does this mean, Gina?
Oh, my God. I just love this story. I love this story. So, you know, it's so funny. Adam Pash and I from Lifehacker, we were sitting next to one another at the Twitter comments this week, and he says, oh, look, you know, there's Chrome frame in IE. And I said, I don't understand. Why would you do this? Well, you know, Google Wave, a big batch of invitations to Google Wave is going out this week on Wednesday or Thursday. I believe it's October 1st. And, you know, the impetus behind Google Chrome Frame, which embeds Chrome's technology inside of Internet Explorer, is basically the Google Wave team said, we're done. We're done trying to get Wave to work in Internet Explorer. We can't do it. We've spent hours and hours and hours. We can't do it. It doesn't have HTML5. It can't handle the JavaScript. There are only so many of us, and Google Wave has lots of issues to work out. So these engineers need to be working out bugs in modern browsers. And they basically said, Internet Explorer just isn't good enough. If you want to use Wave in Internet Explorer, you're going to have to install this Chrome frame. And so Internet Explorer users who want to use Wave will go to Wave and they'll get a little pop-up that says either install Chrome frame or switch to Firefox, Chrome, or Safari, a browser that can handle Wave, essentially. They're basically saying our web app is just too good for your browser, which I got to tell you, I feel so bad for the IE folks. I mean, being one of the IE developers, that's just a slap in the face. You don't want to hear something like that.
Well, don't you think they kind of know?
I mean, well, they've got to know. They've got to know. Even IE8, you know, doesn't have. I mean, these are emerging web technologies, HTML5 and the rest.
They can make a good case. They could say, look, we're not going to support HTML5 yet. We're the big guy. We're the mainstream. We got to.
They could. But you know what I kind of loved is that Google made the code, which pops up this little, dialogue that says you have to install Google Chrome Frame. This is open. So there's kind of all these web developers that we're like, yay, we don't have to support IE anymore. We can just pop this thing up.
Oh, so when you come to a page, the page can say, use Chrome to display this, please.
Yeah, right. The page can say, please.
Is that seamless for the user? The user doesn't know that happened?
Oh, no. It adds a whole other step. You get this pop-up that says, please install Chrome Frame, and you have to click it and you have to install it. Now, this is a browser add-on. So somebody that's like in IT lockdown, you know, someone who's on a corporate computer, then they can't install stuff. They're kind of screwed.
So no website. Lifehacker wouldn't do this. Smarterware wouldn't do this.
I mean, a website that wants to, you know, hit the IE audience without adding that extra step. I mean, this is the thing that I think is just so bold. I mean, they're adding a major extra step to a huge percentage of internet users for people to use Wave. It's kind of amazing. You know, people are saying this is the way that Google is going to be the IE killer, that this is going to be the impetus for people to install Chrome. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting
Wave's
to see.
Wave's going to be small for a long time, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
Wave's going to be small for a long time, isn't it, before it itself gets enough critical mass to force mortals. If you know, people like Anil Dash and Adrian Halavadi say waves too much for them, then I think yeah, the Obama becomes a force to cause Chrome to grow.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely true. The time that it takes for regular people to adopt Wave, regular people who use Internet Explorer, is probably just enough time for Microsoft to be able to support it natively. But, you know, in the beginning, it's going to be a small group of users, many of whom are probably using Firefox or Chrome already. So I don't think it's going to be that big a deal, but I still thought it was quite a public slap in the face for the Wave team.
My vision of this is that you see a little tiny Sergey head popping out of Steve Ballmer's belly.
It's like Alien. Ooh, I don't know if I like this. Well, yeah, Gina,
the vision of Steve Ballmer's belly is enough right there. You don't need Sergey's head for it to be scary.
Gina and I waved at each other because I finally got from a friendly Googler, I got a wave. I got my own wave in.
Hey, how'd you do that?
Never mind. No, somebody who listens to this show very kindly.
I figure all my complaining about SideWiki this week just doomed me to get a wave invite.
No, yeah.
That's it, Jeff. You're out.
I'm out.
So, Gina, so I tried to chat with Gina.
Yep. So I'm logging on right now.
We have to be on at the same time. Is that the key?
Yeah, I mean, it can be
asynchronous, but if you want to have sync, yeah.
But here we are. So I had responded to you earlier in the day.
She said the trick is we have to both be on the same time to chat. I was at the Twitter conference, so things were busy. We should wave during Twig and screencast it. All right. There's Wave. Yeah. There's me and Gina. It's our little Wave. And I know nobody. This is part of the problem. If you don't know anybody in Wave, there's nobody to talk to. There's some fun things in here. Oh, look. She's typing. We can even see her type in real time.
It's like I stay on Facebook before old folks could get in.
Exactly. Who wants to touch a bunch of college kids?
I said, oh, here I am. And nobody knew me. Now, Gina, how do you like it now that you're playing with it?
I like it. It's still very unstable. It's especially in Firefox, which is my primary browser. This got me to install Chrome on my Mac, which I hadn't done up until now.
Yep.
But I do like it. It's got lots of potential, but still not quite stable enough for me to be logged in all the time. I'm logging in a little more now because I know Leo and I know a couple of other people. So it's going to be a matter of stability and knowing enough context, you know, for it to matter. Oh, look at it. So Leo is editing. Nice.
Well, once I get on, can we use Wave to do the show rundown and publish from there?
Yeah,
I
think we could.
Let's do that.
I think I'd like to try it. I mean, it's, you know, it's my hope to run a Wave server, third party server. Because then you can invite people into it. You can have, with one show, you could have multiple messages around it, and it would be kind of fun to try it. I have to say, though, I'm with Anil. I don't know really what to do with it. It's there, it's working. You can make polls, you can have, you know, there's all sorts of bots and stuff you can add to it. It's cool.
Yeah, one cool feature is that if I type an address into a wavelet, I can add a Google map, you know, just highlight it and add a map. And then if you and I are looking at the wave at the same time and I start panning and zooming on that map, you see the panning and zooming as it happens.
Oh, that's kind of cool. Let's try that. 1600. Let's see here. I'm going to type in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, Washington.
I think you're not allowed to do that.
I know. I think it'll be blacked out, won't it? Let's see. Let's see what we get. So does it automatically do it, or do I have to put a plug in? Oh, see, it didn't do anything. Maybe I have to put a plug in or something to have it do that.
Uh-oh, I can't find the map.
Say it's a map address?
There are
little bots and stuff, huh?
Yeah, there's a map point thing somewhere. G+. No.
Oh, well.
Where did it go? Oh, I just got the error message. All the error messages are from the Joss Whedon show Firefly.
Oh, well, yes, they are.
Yeah.
Yes,
so the
I
error messages, everything's shiny, Captain, not to fret.
I love that. I love that. It just shows they're total geeks, you know?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know who else is in here. I also, there are some rendering issues on Firefox and so forth, but I don't know what else is going on. So it's interesting. It doesn't crash a lot.
if you stay, it just crashed on me again. Yeah, see,
it doesn't crash a lot, just frequently.
And the map
I feel like it's the Wright brothers.
We're 3 feet off the ground.
It really is kind of like that. And the map button is like nowhere to be found. Also, they're actively working on this. So
right.
Things move and change. Oh, wave map. Here we go.
Oh, it's wave map. All right. Let me go back to our wave.
To this wave.
So this is our wave. No, that's a different wave. Where's my
So I just added you to a wave.
A new wave.
Yeah, a new wave. Sorry about that. Which I'm looking at a map of Australia, which is what it defaults to because the Google Wave team is based in Australia.
Now, okay.
Do you see it in your inbox?
Should be my inbox, huh? At the bottom, presumably, it's the newest thing.
It should show up at the top.
Or at the top. Welcome to Wave.
It's just, I think the title is ASDF.
There it is. See it now. All right. And there's the plugin, and it's loading, and there's the map. That's neat. Oh, that's cool. And so when you do something to the map, I see it.
Yes. I'm actually trying to load it here.
If you know exactly what you're doing and you constrain it, the demo is quite entertaining. However, if you're just messing around, it's kind of, it doesn't.
Yeah, it's not a smooth user experience. Yeah. I mean, they launched this for developers to build bots, to have things ready for it. But really, this is not a user preview. Now, I don't know.
100,000 people are going to be waving in about 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. Hopefully, I don't know if there'll be a new build that they're going to release, if it's going to be a new server, because this is the developer sandbox that we're on right now. But it'll be interesting to see. It's going to be an exciting day Wednesday.
Yep. All right, we're going to talk more about Google. Gina Trapani is here from smarterware.org. Her tip of the week coming up, Jeff's number of the week in just a bit, my tool of the week. And I regret to report Siva will not be joining us. He had an emergency and cannot make it today, but that's fine. We'll get him on at another time. There is news with the Google book deal, and we'll get that in for you. But I want to briefly mention our friends at audible.com. We know Jeff loves Audible because they've got his book in there. And my books came out before there were audiobooks. In fact, I think my books came out before there was paper.
Stone tablets,
yeah. So there is no, there are no audiobooks of my stuff. Audiblepodcast.com/twig is the place to go, though. And you can find all sorts, 60,000 wonderful titles, all kinds of books about all sorts of subjects, fiction and nonfiction, history, science fiction, romance. If you go there right now, sign up for a gold account at audiblepodcast.com/twig. And your first book is free. Richard Dawkins has a new one. I'm a big Richard Dawkins fan. His newest is called The Greatest Show on Earth, The Evidence for Evolution. And he is definitely a polarizing person, but one of the, I think, the best science writers I know, and a really good science writer on this particular a subject. His books, The Blind Watchmaker and The Selfish Gene, really talk about evolution in a new and fresh and interesting way. The Greatest Show on Earth, The Evidence for Evolution. If you like science reading, a really fantastic place for science. But you get your first one free. So go to audiblepodcast.com/twig. Now, here's the cool thing. When you find a book you like, you click download, and within a minute or two, you'll have the entire book, every word, just like it was published, but it read to you, and not just read to you by a machine, but read to you by somebody who can really make a book come to life. This is better than your mommy reading to you. This is professional actors who are just brilliant, or they're Jeff Jarvis. If you listen to What Would Google Do, sometimes they use the author, and a lot of times the author has an insight into it that really brings it to life. So
they had to put two producers on me because I speak too damn fast.
That's all they were saying to me when I read a short story, and they kept saying, slow down. Audiblepodcast.com/twig. Try it right now. Your first book is free. Great way to keep up. If you're in the car, if you're at the gym, wherever you can't hold a book, you can read a book. Thanks to Audible. We really love them, and we hope you'll enjoy them. Audiblepodcast.com/twig. Google had another outage, Gmail out again, and O'Malley took this opportunity to say, this shows you'll never, these online things will never work. The cloud is dead.
I feel like this is deja vu.
Yeah, we just had this conversation.
we're going to have this conversation a lot.
Yeah, the cloud will never be perfect, but how often does your corporate email go down? I mean, email goes down. That's websites go down. Servers go down. I think you responded, didn't you, Jeff, to Om Malik?
No, I didn't.
Somebody, I thought you did. Maybe it was.
I shrugged.
You shrugged. What are you going to say? I love them, but that's a, you know.
See, I remember Gina saying last time that it worked on IMAP, so I was on my iPhone and my IMAP worked, and so I was happy.
Right.
Awesome. Hey, there's that big Cyanogen story I'd love to.
And we were going to get the developer on, we'll keep working on getting him on. This was your tip last week for hacking your iPhone, or your Google phone, I should say.
Yeah, last week I featured the Cyanogen mod, which is a custom Android build that you can flash onto your Android phone. I'm using a G1 and add some new features from the Donut Tree, which is the upcoming update, and also gives you a little more access to the root file system. So it gives you root access, so you can install other applications that require root access, like a tethering app. I've been running the Cyanogen mod for 2 weeks now, and I absolutely love it. And something really sad and upsetting happened this week. Google sent Cyanogen, who's the developer, a cease and desist letter and asked them to stop distributing the mod. And the reason is they said that even though Android, and this is how I understand it, even though Android, the operating system, is open source, there are several closed sourced applications that come with it, like the Gmail client, like the Market client, right. Like Google Maps. So they're basically saying, and to Google's credit, they did a post in the Android developers blog about this. So at first I was upset that they sent them a C&D, like just, before you get the lawyers involved, it often just helps to do a little outreach, but they did a post on the Android developers blog explaining the situation and saying that, and I'm not sure exactly how this works, but they basically have business deals that involve distributing these kinds of special apps, on a per provider basis. So you can't redistribute a custom Android build with these closed apps. And Cyanogen's point is, the mod is the ROM is basically dead at this point because it's useless without, for example, the Market app, because then you can't install applications or, the Gmail client or the Maps client. I mean, no one would want to install it at that point. So it's a bummer. I'm really bummed out about it. I see Google's point. I wasn't aware of the nuance that there's a difference between the. I didn't realize that those client apps were closed source. Cyanogen said that it will, it's a chilling effect. The C&D is a chilling effect on sort of whole ROM development community. He's not trying to compete, with Google or screw up any of their business deals. It's just kind of a bummer. I mean, as a developer, I can tell you only develop on platforms that you love. I mean, it's the ultimate way to pay homage to something that you love. And that's what he's doing. And so such a small percentage of Android users are actually going to install a custom build. It's just a bummer that it has to stop. So, I tried to get Cyanogen on to do an interview today and he doesn't want to screw up his relationship with Google. He doesn't want to say anything he regrets. And I think the last thing that he said on Twitter was, I'm still just so disgusted. He said, I'm not sure if I'm ready to do an interview yet. I'm disgusted. I put so much work into this. I'm really upset about how this turned out. There is a discussion going on in the Android developers Google group about the possibility of making open source alternatives to the closed source apps in order to make distributing custom ROMs kosher in the future. But that's going to take some work. And right now, this guy put a lot of work into this, and it's just a bummer.
I understand Google's point of view, and I think that they didn't probably have any choice. They may not have handled it properly. It'd be nice to have called him, but I can see why they said, look, we can't open source Gmail,
Right. Well, yeah. Well, it's the Gmail client. It's the native Gmail client, which really is the best part of Android, as far as I'm concerned. It's one of the main reasons why I switched over from the iPhone. It's push, and it's just a fantastic email client, especially with the G1. But Maps in the Market, you just don't have no conduit. You have no way to get applications if you don't have the Market app.
Right.
So he
couldn't then strip out those contested things and still put out a ROM because nobody would want it. There'd be no use for it.
Well, there would be no way to install other applications without the Market app.
He'd have to write his own Market app.
Yeah, they would. He have to write his own market app. They have to rewrite essentially these closed source apps,
right?
In order for people to get on it and download it. And for reasons I don't quite understand, someone asked the developer, "Well, hey, I bought the G1 from T-Mobile. You know, I have, that means I have a license to these closed source apps. If I install your ROM, can I just move them over from, you know, my original install or download them again? Don't I have the right to do that?" And he said no. I'm not really sure why that is. So it sucks. I mean, the good news is that Google is being communicative about this, and there are developers on the team that feel bad about it. I mean, they're riding on the backs of, they want developers to love Android and develop for it. They don't want to stop this, but it's just kind of the state right now. So I'm wondering, I mean, this is such a small use case. I don't know if these closed source apps are going to get open source alternatives that are just as good. I'm not sure how this is going to shake out, but I hope it turns out well, because this ROM is really cool. I love it. And I just hate to see it die this way.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, if you already have the ROM, could you still install it? I mean, he can't offer it for download, but I know some people who still have the file.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So he's not supposed to distribute it, but
others could do so.
Others could probably do so. Yeah. I mean, this could get, it gets sticky, but yeah. I believe
so. Google create, and I'm ignorant as hell about this, could Google basically create a version of what he did to get the same benefit that keeps them in control over what they need to be in control of?
Why would Google want to do that?
To get the developers developing.
So I don't understand. You can be a developer for Android, can't you, without the Cyanogen ROMs? Or no?
Yeah, the Cyanogen mod is a particular custom Android build that he threw in a couple of extra features, some things from Donut, a couple of apps that require root access, which the Cyanogen mod gives you. Like, so, you know, the root access issue is probably not something that Google's going to distribute and, you know, to everyone. Lets you do things that, you know, I'm not even sure if tethering, you know, using root access, for example. So there's a tethering app that you have to have root access. I'm not even really sure if that's kosher, you know, if that's even okay. Right. So the issue is that somebody can't, it's not a fork. I don't believe it's a proper fork of the Android project, but it's just a custom build. This kind of makes the whole community around custom builds, and there is a whole community. There are tons of different ROMs. Cyanogen is one of the most popular and most well-known. So, and I believe he's the first one to get the C&D. It just stops that whole thing.
It sounds like more it's a question of broken-hearted developers who thought that Android really was an open source project, and in fact it's not.
This is the thing. This is why I'm heartbroken about this. It feels like such an Apple move. Like, I was just like, I love my Android phone for all these philosophical reasons. It's open source and people can do what they want, but it's not totally open. Not the client apps. Not all the apps that run on Android are open and can be freely redistributed.
Yeah.
Which is the bummer.
You could still hack Android. You just can't make a mashup ROM.
Right, you can't redistribute a full build, but yes,
you could send out, for instance, root access patch.
Yes, I'm not sure if that's true. I'm not sure. I think that
you might have to change the entire ROM to make that possible.
This is the thing. I think this is why this ROM exists, right? Because I don't believe that you could just send an update to the existing, you know, build that you would get on your phone and get root access.
Right. And why do we want root access? If we have root access, we can do more different.
Yeah, you get a little more control. One of the biggest things that you can do is you can tether, for example. Now there's an app that lets you tether called PDANet through your USB cable. You don't need a custom ROM to use that, and that does work. But you have to install this like Windows utility on your PC, and the phone has to be connected. This other tether app that you need root access for, you literally just tap the phone. And then suddenly you have a Wi-Fi point wherever you are. It's kind of like a MiFi. It turns it into a MiFi, and then, you know, you can get online. So part of me feels a little bad about...
Not much use to me because I'm on T-Mobile, and there's no reason why I would want T-Mobile high-speed access. Quote, high-speed access.
Right, high-speed, right, yeah. Exactly.
Well, it's a shame, but I think in some ways it's a coming of age. It's a realization that it's not a fully open source project.
Right. Not all the components of it are open source, only the operating system. And just to say, tethering isn't the only thing you can do with root access. You also just have you have a terminal. You have access to the file system.
It's an operating system.
It becomes like full on operating system without less protection. I mean, you can obviously also really screw up your phone if you don't know what you're doing and you have root access. But for more advanced users, the people who are more likely to install this ROM, and these are the people that are the most that love Android the most and are the most loyal and are the people who are out there saying, hey, there's an alternative to iPhone. You know, this is why they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot. And this is why I really hope that they can come to a compromise that allows the custom ROM community to do what they do without this kind of issue.
Yeah. So Jeff's book, What Would Google Do? Now Jeff has to do a rewrite. What Would Google Buy? That was his subtitle to the news that Google's back on the market, baby. Eric Schmidt says we're the acquisitions are back on. How long have they gone without buying anything?
You know, I don't know, and I think they bought little stuff. But I think the interesting question to me is, what should they buy?
Right. So Schmidt was at an event in Pittsburgh. He says we got $19 billion in cash and short-term investments. We're going to try to buy some small company every month. They have, because we know about Onto, we know about reCAPTCHA. I guess my question would be, is how is Google's track record on these acquisitions? I mean, I think of acquisitions like Dodgeball and Jaiku, which really didn't go anywhere. I mean, I don't know if Google feels like they got their money's worth. Clearly they didn't with Dodgeball. The team's left and gone on to create something actually of some real value.
But then there's, you know, YouTube, they say will be profitable shortly. Blogger, I think, bought them any day. The second Tuesday of next week, as they say in Wimpy. Blogger taught them a lot. I just saw the other day that the successor to JotSpot, Google Sites, has finally added an API. You know, a lot of times they are hiring the staff on. FeedBurner, I think they lost some of the best people there. Dick Costolo was great.
Right.
So the problem with all these big companies when they buy, but then again, they also know the limits of their own development. And it's a way to get in new functions and new, then again, Wave comes from a purchase of smart people in Australia. And a lot of the great map things have come from buying companies to hire talent.
The Rasmussens, yeah.
Right, so it's the argument of it's an acquire. You're doing it to hire, not to acquire.
So what should Google buy? More cloud stuff? Small Web 2.0 companies?
My suggestion this week was after the SideWiki mess was Technorati.
Yeah, maybe. That would be interesting, huh?
It's about organizing content.
Right.
You know, wouldn't be insane, and they need a strategy.
I wonder I'd love to see somebody do a rundown of acquisitions versus 20% projects, right? So like Gmail, Google Reader, maybe Docs were 20% projects. Like what are Google's most successful projects? You know, how many of them are acquisitions versus the 20% time?
Yeah. If I'd had time, I would have loved to have done this. List all the acquisitions, list all the projects, and list success and failures and just kind of get a sense. I'm sure internally they know, but a sense of how well they do with third party stuff in incorporating it compared to stuff that's already generated at Google. Whether these acquisitions have paid out. I mean, DoubleClick, DoubleClick was a big acquisition that presumably meant money for them.
Wasn't Google Analytics an acquisition?
Say again?
Google Analytics, wasn't that an acquisition?
It was. That's right.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they've done a lot better than AOL and Yahoo did.
Well, that's not necessarily
that's not saying much.
They did well. It's just better than. It's a hard thing to do. And yet, for growth, they probably can't do it all internally. They need to acquire to continue to grow.
I think if they concentrate on the talent, that's where they've succeeded best.
Yeah.
You know, you're right. DoubleClick's a little different because DoubleClick is really about a business strategy, and they just announced, we talked about it last week, that they're going into display ads and can bring new value to that, and that's important for the entire media industry. But that was a mature bought company. There's a great graphic. I can't find it on the spur of the moment that shows all the Google acquisitions as a metro map, as a subway map. all the stops and all the lines and where they've done it.
You know, speaking of Yahoo, they're getting a little heat because they've started to brand Flickr as a Yahoo. I don't know why this would bug people, but for some people are very Yahoo is, you know, they're very adamant about Yahoo and about Flickr, I should say. And Flickr's cool. Yahoo's not. In fact, Carol Bart said a great quote saying, what was it? Why do you guys all think Google's so cool and Yahoo's not? Would you please? You're getting on my nerves here. I can't remember. I have to find the exact quote, but it's very funny. People are unhappy about the fact that they've put Flickr by Yahoo. Here's the quote. This is Carol Bart's Yahoo CEO. When you get outside New York and Silicon Valley, everyone loves Yahoo. I just want to transplant all you guys out of your cynicism. What's wrong with you guys? Go be cynical about frickin' Google. You get me pissed off. Now, that's a CEO I can like.
I have a post from 2 years ago complaining about Yahoo Mail killing my account if I didn't use it. And to this day, I get new comments every week. I don't think they love Yahoo out there. And the fact that Yahoo, we're going to hear that damned Yahoo again.
Oh, God.
Because they're spending $100 million on advertising. What does that tell you? People don't love Yahoo.
No, you're right. If they did, they wouldn't have to.
It's like a community.
There I said, Google.
Here's a map from TechCrunch. Thanks to our chat room for sending this along. It's based on the New York subway.
There it is.
The New York subway map. And it shows all the Google acquisitions, and holy cow, the colors are technology, web services, mapping, imaging, search, social, video, advertising, VoIP, and news. And really, there's quite a bit of stuff here. Urchin became became analytics. Keyhole, which led into their mapping. Picasa.
Picasa.
Picasa, you can't forget. YouTube and DoubleClick, of course, very big acquisitions, but there are a lot of little ones on here along the way. It's a Grand Central was an acquisition. Now Google Voice, JotSpot, Postini. Very interesting.
Postini.
Yeah. Somehow I don't know how this happened. It looks like AOL is on this map. I don't think did Google buy AOL and I missed that.
Google invested a lot in AOL.
They bought into. Okay.
But, you know, a word about Flickr. The Flickr community is particularly possessive of that
Flickr.
Place.
Yeah.
I developed Firefox add-ons. I did one for Gmail, one for Google Calendar. I've done one for YouTube, one for Flickr. It was the Flickr one that people reacted the most strongly to. I got a lot of upset email about.
Really?
Yeah, it was interesting. I think that there's just a sense of ownership there. It's a great community. Flickr is one of the social websites that I have been loyal to for years now. It's really great. I get to watch all my friends' kids grow up.
I love Flickr.
It's a great site. But
I think Yahoo's losing a lot of money on Flickr. I think it's like YouTube, a big bandwidth hog, and they haven't really figured out a way to monetize it. There's no ads on it. In fact, really, the only way they're making money on it is you can buy prints. Does anybody buy prints on Flickr? I don't think so. When's the last time you bought a calendar?
I have a pro account, and I actually have ordered. Prints and stuff. But I think I love the product. I think they may be running small ads. I think they have some sponsorships from camera makers.
Oh, okay.
I think that Yahoo's done a fine job with Flickr. I don't think that it's changed or degraded since the acquisition. You don't hear as much about it. It's not quite as hip and cool as it used to be. It used to feel like this thing that no one knew about, and it feels like everyone knows about it now, but I still use it. It's such a great UI. And
well, it's also the biggest photo community after Facebook. I mean, it's really, there's the Flickr from Yahoo. I could see why that would bug people a little bit. It's like Yahoo saying, don't forget Flickr from Yahoo.
Yeah.
And the new branding, Jeff, the Yahoo branding is Y!OU. Get it?
I know. That's just so dorky. How much money? The money they spent on the ad agency alone is ridiculous.
That exclamation point was just the bane of my existence at Lifehackers. Like, we'd have these editorial, these copy style guide meetings. Like, did we put the exclamation point? God, it makes it read so funny, but this is their name.
It's like you're doing an ad for them.
Yeah.
It's like you're always, Yahoo! Yahoo!
and the great... the peanut butter memo guy got hired by AOL last week.
No.
I'm forgetting his name suddenly.
The guy who said we're spreading ourselves too thin like peanut butter and a piece of bread. Yeah. He left.
By the way, my favorite resignation letter ever, if you can find it, is Stuart Butterfield's resignation from Yahoo, about how he was tired of the tin business.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
It was brilliant, and I think it said a lot, and Yahoo just can't change. It's still the same. It's still a company that's going to go off and spend hundreds of millions of dollars to tell us to love us.
Stuart founded Flickr with Katarina Fake.
Right.
And, here it is. Dear Brad, as you know, tin is in my blood. For generations, my family has worked with this most useful of metals. This is so bizarre. When I read this, I thought, what? Huh? When I joined Yahoo back in 21, it was a sheet tin concern of great momentum, growth, and innovation. I knew this was the place for me. He talks about the company grew and expanded into dies and punches, copper, corrugated steel, synthesized rubber, piping, milling equipment, engines, instruments, weaponry, and so on. Then electronics, grain processing, lighting, and salty snacks. Since the late 80s, as the general manufacturing, oil exploration, and refining, logistics, and hotel and casino divisions rose to prominence, I have felt somewhat sidelined. By the time of the internet revolution and our expansion into websites, I have been cast adrift. Nary a sheet of tin has rolled off our own production lines in over 30 years. Please accept my resignation, and I don't need no fancy parties or gold watches. I'll be spending more time with my family, tending to my small but growing alpaca herd, and of course, getting back to working with tin, my first love. I think that's actually pretty clever now that I read it.
It is the greatest ever.
In hindsight.
Yeah, that is classic. That'll go down in the annals. Can we talk about geolocation real quick?
Yes, because I know you're all excited about this.
I am kind of excited about this.
This is Twitter, though, right? Not to Google.
Yeah, this is
Twitter. But it'll tie back to Google in a second.
Okay.
Keep going, Gina. We'll tie it back. Sure.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. So I was at the Twitter conference this week in Los Angeles, which was weird, but good.
Wait a minute. Why weird? Because Tony Robbins was there?
Well, you know, actually, I got totally sucked into the Tony Robbins tractor beam. I mean, that guy, he can own a...
Ooh, you're hypnotized.
Oh,
you know, I've seen
goodness.
It happen so many times. He's very charismatic. He's a brilliant speaker.
He's a passionate storyteller. Yep. I mean, it was amazing. I used to make fun of him, but now that I've seen him talk, I feel like I've been brainwashed somehow. The conference was a little weird for me because I normally go to tech conferences that are developer heavy and tech heavy. And this was very kind of
Hollywood
celebrity heavy.
Yeah.
Like Twitter, it was a little disappointingly celebrity heavy. So it wasn't necessarily the group that I'm used to, but there was a developer track that was very lightly attended. So it was fantastic for me because I got to ask, Alex Payne and Ryan Sarver, you know, as many questions as I wanted because there are about, you know, maybe 10 to 15 people in the room. And it was kind of a big deal. They were going to launch geolocation API features for the conference. And I guess it just hadn't made it through the final stages of testing yet. So the launch didn't happen, but they explained a lot about how it's going to work.
So this is along with Retweet. These are two new additions to the API.
Yes. Project Retweet is an addition to the API, and actually is interesting. They're launching these new features via the API first, so that application developers will get a head start on how they will, display the interface and how it will work. And Google, I guess, could have learned a little something from SideWiki. It's pretty interesting. I mean, Twitter is basically giving application developers the chance to make this stuff work on the front end before they do. On their website. So yes, Project Retweet is a separate thing, although I got some details on that as well. The Retweet project is it's basically just like public bookmarking. You can't comment on retweets. You'll just be able to say, here, I've retweeted this, and you can't make any comments, and other people see it. The people who follow you see it. So it works a lot like bookmarks, like that you can't edit the person's original tweet or add a comment to it. That was a little disappointing, and Jeff, I loved your response to my tweet about that. You retweeted it with a comment, which I thought was great. It wasn't lost on me.
I love meta.
Yeah. But the geolocation features are pretty interesting. So basically, this is how it's going to work. For a user profile and for each tweet, you will be able to include latitude and longitude coordinates. And it's totally opt-in, right? So it's off by default. You have to go to a page on Twitter site in your settings to say, yes, you can save and publish my location details. But this is the interesting thing. Twitter is going to delete location data, the latitude and longitude data for tweets, after a 14-day period, because they to avoid subpoenas.
Huh.
So now, like Google Latitude.
Oh, I can understand that, because you wouldn't want to use it, because if law enforcement said, well, where were you on the night of October 22nd, 2003?
Right, but there, too, I want an opt-in. If I give a restaurant review, I want it to live on and not die off in 14 days.
Well, unless you murder the chef, but that's well, yes. that's a special occasion.
With a butcher knife in the library.
In the library, yes. Yeah. And we know it's a library because it says so in your tweet.
No, I think that that's a reasonable response to privacy concerns, but you think, Gina, that it kind of makes it less useful?
Well, no, I mean, I was surprised about it because I thought that there was like precedence for this stuff. I mean, I just didn't
Latitude
know.
Keeps it forever?
I'm not sure. I think that Latitude deletes it when you update again. I'm not sure how it
so
works.
So it doesn't keep history.
I expected that it would anonymize it in a way or fuzz it. I thought there would be a way to say, you know, I was in this sort of 10 to 15 mile area. But I guess I really honestly haven't thought about it very much. I don't do geolocation stuff because I really don't want to, you know, people to see where, you know, where I am, anybody to be able to see where I am at any given point. But it really kind of made me think about it. They're not going to do this indefinitely. They're going to figure out a safe, quote unquote, this is what they said, a safe way to store this data historically. But the risk comes in that application developers are going to get this data and they're encouraging application developers to also delete this data and not to store historical data because app developers could become could get subpoenaed. But I don't know, but I'm not sure how they're going to enforce this or check it, you know? So it'll be interesting to see how that works. If your Twitter application,
The Guardian, Gina, The Guardian had put its API for all of its content. Mm-hmm. And one of the requirements under British libel law is that you must refresh the content every 24 hours. So that in case there's been a correction or a deletion, you'll get that in the pool. It sounds like you need to do something like that where you have to refresh or else your key expires.
Huh.
Right. But if you're writing an application like my application Twitterlytic, which stores a history of yours and your friends' tweets, you know, over time, right. Basically you have to go back into your own database and say, okay, the latitude and longitude coordinates that are older than 14 days, scrub them. Ooh. Or change them or, get rid of them. And
how do they enforce that?
Well, this is the thing. How are they going to enforce it? That, you know, it remains to be seen. I don't know how they will.
It's not and like you can have this geolocation information will self-destruct in 2 weeks.
Right. Right.
Well, and cynically, it just means that they don't have to have the lawyers.
They're not responsible. Gina gets the subpoena.
Well, right, yeah. Right. And they're saying, you know, be careful what you do with this data and don't keep historical data so that you don't have to deal with subpoenas because they're a big deal.
By the way, that's the new title of the show. Gina rhymes with subpoena. So send them to her. That's what it is. You're exactly right, Jeff. They're just washing their hands of it. And they're saying,
I mean, a little cynical, but
I think you're right.
They want the feature so much. This was probably their answer to the lawyers to say, F you, we're going to do it anyway.
See, I use, believe it or not, I'm crazy, but I've used Brightkite. I've used Latitude. And right now I'm a big fan of Foursquare. Mm-hmm. The reason I think Foursquare is the winner in this is because it's a game and it's fun and you like to be the mayor. And they have very clear monetization potential because the way Foursquare works, when you go to a place three times, you become the mayor of that place and you maintain your mayorship as long as no one gets there more than you do. And what you're starting to see is bars say free drinks to the mayor, which encourages people to come and compete to see who can go there more.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh.
And so it's good for the bar. And what I believe will happen, Foursquare is not doing this yet, but what I believe, by the way, these are the guys who started Dodgeball. They've moved out of Google and created basically another Dodgeball. The way they monetize this is they have business services. You know, we'll work with your business to encourage traffic. They give you badges. It's
fun. This gets us back to Google. Is that the other thing Google did this week was release place pages, which I think is really important, and Twitter fits right into that. In the bigger meta view, I think we end up with an annotated world that every place on Earth is going to have comment about it.
I think it's such an interesting idea. Where does this information come from, this place pages information?
Well, right now, I mean, because Google right now, of course, in Maps has Yelp and has other things, and Yelp is very good. This is actually a bit of a side wiki problem for Google, because Google, even though it's created an aggregated page of place wiki, it is encouraging people to make comments there, and it now competes with Yelp and outside.in and other collectors of the annotations around places. But I understand why Google wants to do it. When you have Eric Schmidt saying that mobile is going to be more profitable for us than the web, they recognize that every time they get new data, Marissa Meyer has bragged about all the geo points of data they have. At some point, you're going to want to say, who said what about this restaurant or about this monument or about this photo in the gallery, whatever, and or this bar, or God knows, help us, this date. Then you add in Yelp, Twitter with Geo if it has life and legs, and other sources like that, blog posts organized through outside.in. It becomes incredibly rich now around a geo annotation layer of information.
Well, you know, as a local business, I went to the Google Local Business Center and inputted data about my business, its location. You can put in pictures and videos. And that's important because when you do a Google Local search, the first thing at the top of a Google Local search result is a map of, related businesses. And you want to be on that list. And that's free. So that's one way they get of people putting in this information. They already have every business in the world presumably wanting to do that.
Like our profiles and everything else. The more data we give them. Right. It's a profile of businesses. Now if you add SideWiki onto that, if people are commenting on the website for that place, it all comes together.
Well, and this is where the real value is. That's why Robert Scoble's always said that Facebook has the best play in all of this because they have all this metadata. You have your social graph and they have the metadata. Google's missing the social graph piece, but I think they probably could find a way to make that work with Google Social. Now when you go to a place, you could say, here's what your friends are saying about that place. That's hugely valuable to Google.
Yeah, I think for the geo stuff, being able to check in at businesses and comment about businesses in public places like that is really useful. But, you know, speaking of Scoble, he did this great post about Foursquare, and he said that he checks in. There's a Ritz hotel near his home. So when he's home, he checks in at the Ritz and not the exact location of his home.
And he says, so he's the mayor of the Ritz-Carlton Half Moon
right.
Bay. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So he's the mayor of the Ritz-Carlton. And I believe that Foursquare allows you to do this. So Foursquare, and I'm not sure because I don't use it, but they allow you to choose
you can check
a
in anywhere
nearby
you want.
Place. You can check in wherever you want. Yeah. Right. You're not forced to use the GPRS coordinates on your device.
Furthermore, you can check in after you leave or as you're leaving. So if you're worried about stalkers, this is kind of what I do is I check in as I leave as opposed to as I arrive.
See, that's smart. That's smart. And I hope that Twitter client developers will keep this in mind when they make their UI for sending lat long coordinates to Twitter, because Twitter doesn't have any way to verify whether or not the coordinates you're sending are true. And it would be really nice if I could say, if I could check in at the coffee shop down the street when I'm really at the office, and say, hey, I'm here. So it's a way for me to control the impression that I put out on social media networks, right? That's why the only photos you'll see of me online are ones of me looking up or whatever, right? Because this is the kind of control that we want, but without sort of revealing our true location. Because I guess there's another service, Gowalla, I want to say, that actually forces you to use your device's coordinates and you can't change them. Scoble called that the anti-feature, and I absolutely agree with
him. I think I'm with him on that. Brightkite allows you to say anywhere nearby as well. Now, Latitude's automatic, isn't it? Latitude just puts a pin where you are.
I've never even installed it.
I've used Latitude, and it basically the Android phone is constantly sending out a signal as to where you are. It's like a little dot on the map that follows you around. Mm-hmm. It's automatic. That's really scary.
But that becomes interesting too. I'm advancing to my number of the week. One of the cool features I saw on that is Map My Run, and the features that enable you to take, rather than a static place, a route. And whether it's a prospective route of where you're going to go, a route of where you've been, and what all is along the way becomes really interesting too. And it goes against time there. And then you go to things like traffic and recommendations and who's there at the same time and how far away are you from things. And it gets extremely rich. It becomes a 3D chess game in geography.
I love that. Now, Ken Shepardson's asking in our friend feed chat a legitimate question, which is why the annotations on a business site don't bother you when SideWiki does. What is the difference there, Jeff?
Oh, that bothers me as well, because I think what can happen is that Uncle Luigi's Pizzeria can be slammed by
Domino's.
Right. And so, no, I've got the exact same problem there.
Yeah.
And what you want, you also saw this happen with, and I haven't followed this very much, but with Squidoo, Seth Godin's company did something with businesses this week, and there was controversy around that and whether people can opt in or opt out or have control and have responsibility. If you allow, I understand the conundrum here. If you allow people to opt out of SideWiki, then every spammer will opt out.
Right.
And then maybe at some point that becomes a sign of disrespect right there. I don't know, but you've got to recognize that some people are going to take responsibility and some people are going to have to deal with these demons who come along.
It's kind of like the Google book search deal. There's some real benefits, potential public benefits, but there are also trouble in some areas. And you kind of have to work it out.
It's a problem of Google size now. And yep. And when you go to something like Places, they're going to compete with other companies and they're going to compete with their own channel.
We don't have time to talk about this and Siva can't join us. So maybe we'll postpone it for next week.
That's a good idea.
But it looks like the Google book settlement is now back on the table. Google saying, all right, if the DOJ doesn't like it, we better go back and renegotiate. So this year old deal looks like it's fallen apart again and it's back on the table, back negotiating with the Google book search. We'll talk about that in just a bit, but let's get right now and let's get to Gina's tip of the week. Gina?
Yes. This is an exciting one. This week, Google launched Google Sync for iPhone users and for Windows Mobile users and for Nokia S60 users. And this is really cool. So right now, the best way to get your Gmail on your iPhone is via IMAP, which isn't quite push. It's pretty good. It depends on how often your client checks the IMAP server for new messages, but it is polling. Well, Google Sync gives you access to your Gmail account via Microsoft Exchange Active Sync. Okay, so if you set up your iPhone to get your Gmail or your iPhone or your Windows Mobile phone or Nokia phone via Microsoft Active Sync, and you get live push Gmail alerts, calendars, and contacts. Now, there are some limitations, and we'll link to those in the show notes. And there are some things that you should be aware of, like if you delete a message on the iPhone, it actually gets archived, that kind of thing. So check that out. But if you're currently using IMAP on your iPhone or your Windows Mobile phone, definitely consider switching over to Google Sync, which is not a separate add-on or product or app. It is just Microsoft Exchange Active Sync access to your Gmail.
I've been using the Google Sync on my calendars and address book, and I just now go in there and I see, oh, they've added mail as an entry there. So I just turn that on. And now I'm going to have push mail as well.
Yep. That's good stuff.
That's really nice. Yeah. Well done, Google. And now Jeff's number of the week.
My number is 87. Ad Week was in New York.
No, I think you shouldn't explain it. Just say it. 87. Thank you.
87. That's it. It's like The Prisoner and Gina's Bike. And number six.
And we could leave it for the audience to determine.
Go find it and you get a prize.
No, we won't start that yet. What is 87?
Google's Creative Labs presented at Adweek, and some of it's stuff we know, but it's really a nice presentation of neat crap that's made on the web using tools. So it includes a worldwide real-life Monopoly, a karaoke tube, watching what people are buying real-life on Zappos, Map My Run, YouTube Symphony, and all those kinds of things. So it's a really nice little presentation to give you hope for the web and creativity again.
There's hope for the web, ladies and gentlemen. My tool was going to be SideWiki, but I guess there's nothing more to be said about it.
We killed it.
We really, well, that's good. We're done anyway. But, you know, my initial reaction to SideWiki, as it is with anything new on the web, is, oh, let me try this. And I tried it and I liked it. But boy, after I read you and Gina's comments on this thing, I thought, well, I guess I should be aware of it anyway. And I guess what people should do is sign up to use those webmaster tools so you at least can assert some ownership of this. I wish they had, and I hope and I presume that they will have some anti-spam tools and things like that, because I could just see what a mess this is going to be.
There's also a bookmarklet for people who don't want to install a toolbar and just want to see comments on their own site or comments on other sites. There is a bookmarklet, and we'll include the link in the show notes. It's in our friend feed room.
Yes, and that's a good point. You can actually, if you could figure out what the URL is for the SideWiki, you can give out, and I've seen people do this, a URL that seems to work in any browser that gives you the SideWiki as well as the page, right? So you don't have to have the toolbar. You can actually figure out what that URL is, and I guess the bookmark might help with that.
Yeah, and you just can't post comments that way. You need the toolbar in order to
read
post
only.
Comments.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the API exists, and I know, and without a doubt, there will be plugin like WordPress plugins and other products that come out that let you comment and view. But for now, there's a bookmarklet. I'm sure in the next couple of weeks, if this does catch on, there'll be other ways to access the comments.
designmeme.com/sidewinder. I'm sorry, design meme, not me. designmeme.com/sidewinder, and there you can find the bookmarklet right there. Just drag it to your toolbar, and you don't have to have anything fancier on your system. I'm using Safari, and it still works. Gina Trapani is at smarterware.org. That's the place to go to find all sorts of great stuff. She's writing posts like crazy, and of course you see her on Lifehacker. She's a contributor there, the Harvard Business Review, and many other sites. But the best place to go is smartware.org. Jeff Jarvis is Mr. Buzz Machine. We always love talking to Jeff. Glad you're back after your surgery, and it sounds like in fine fettle. Buzz Machine.
Ornery again.
He's back to his cantankerous old self. We thank you for joining us. I have a lot of voicemails, but in the interest of time, I won't play them. We'll play them for next week. But if you do want to give us listener feedback, our listener feedback line is 9795-TWIG-VM. That's 979-589-4486. It's a Google Voice number, and you can just leave a message there for us, and we'll just play a whole bunch of them. Next week, you guys don't have to show up. I'll just play hundreds of, because there's hundreds of voicemail messages in there.
Yeah, on slow news weeks, definitely.
Yeah, this was not a slow news week.
No, it was not.
9795 Twig VM. We do appreciate your listening. Don't forget, you can watch live. We do this show at 5:15 Eastern, 2:15 Pacific, every Saturday afternoon at live.twit.tv. But we love it if you listen to and subscribe at the iTunes Store, the Zune Store, or anywhere you get your podcasts. Just look for Twig. Thank you, Gina. Thank you, Jeff. We'll see you next time.